Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Wait. This is Traditional Voices from the Eastern Door. I am Blue Eagle, and with the voices of Thunderbird, Turtle Woman, and Redstone, we present to you in this production the traditional values and the ancient spiritual teachings of our ancestors. It is important to mention that we are the Wabanaki, the people of the dawn. Our nation was one of the first to encounter the European people and their culture. It has been more than 500 years now, and the result of this exchange is clearly visible. The process of assimilation has devastated our existence here on Turtle Island and has left our people confused and nowhere to turn for help. We now look towards the only means available to sustain our existence and to maintain our identity as a people. In the recent past, a small group of people of the Wabanakis have taken it upon themselves to revive the spiritual ways, and with the kindness and generosity of our neighboring tribes, we have set forth with a commitment to do whatever is humanly possible to help put order and direction in our traditional ways. It is with this understanding our nation can build on strength and unity. Education is very important in the modern day. We hope to provide that in this production, as well as to send a message to all the people of the world. Taho. As I walk along the red ochre sands of the East Coast, the cool breeze that flows through my hair is brought in by the crashing waves at the breakwater. The rolling green hills that taper off into the distance remind me of the endless time that our ancestors lived in harmony with this land. I take a deep breath of cool, fresh air and think of my people of ancient ways. How strong they must have been. Experts of survival, 10 times the strength, free to roam in an untamed wilderness, learning and adapting to the environment with each step, coexisting with nature rather than trying to tame it. Suddenly, I feel a rush of energy and my chest expands to think that I am a descendant of this proud and noble people, the Mi'kmaqs. Yes, spirit lives, and as sure as the blood that flows through our veins, our ancestor spirit is alive in us. Taho.
Traditional Voices from the Eastern Door is the name of the commentary, Awakening to the Spirit, you just heard. The special cassette, Traditional Voices from the Eastern Door, features Wabanaki musicians George Paul, James Augustine, Donna Augustine, Joey Paul, and Ivan Paul. We also played the Mi'kmaq Honor Song from the Wabanaki drum Eastern Eagle Singers off their Sound of America Records cassette. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. We begin today's program with this feature in honor of my guest, Evan Pritchard, who, like me, is proud to be a Wabanaki, people of the Dawnland. The Wabanaki is a confederacy of four Northeast tribal nations, Mi'kmaq, Maliseet, Penobscot, and Passamaquoddy. Wolf Mountain Radio is very pleased to have Evan as our guest today. He is a very fine Native American scholar, author, and educator. Mr. Pritchard, who is of Mi'kmaq and Celtic heritage, is a very fine cultural historian and biogeographer of Native North America. I am honored that he and I are good friends as well as colleagues. We both share many of the same concerns, the protection of sacred Mother Earth and well-being of all life, concern for world peace, social, cultural, economic, and environmental justice, and the right of sovereignty and self-determination of indigenous peoples. In 1998, I had the pleasure to first meet Evan at an historic gathering entitled Belonging to Mother Earth, Indigenous Wisdom and Healing. This event, co-sponsored by Radio for Peace International, was a conference and powwow that brought together many respected Native elders, spiritual leaders, and wisdom keepers from all over the world in order to counsel together. As many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, due to the request of the elders and traditional leaders to have their voices heard all over the world, I had the honor to host and produce Radio for Peace International's live broadcast and recording of the Belonging to Mother Earth, Indigenous Wisdom and Healing speeches and interview sessions, including a presentation by today's program guest, my Mi'kmaq brother, Evan Pritchard. By the way, that very special Belonging to Mother Earth, Indigenous Wisdom and Healing audio series are listed in RFPI's catalog and can be purchased from Radio for Peace International's USA's office, whose mailing address is Radio for Peace International, RFPI, P.O. Box 3165, Newburgh, Oregon, 97132, USA, or email Radio for Peace International at info@rfpi.org for more information. In 1998, Evan Pritchard founded the Center for Algonquin Culture, CAC. The center serves to protect, preserve, and restore the dignity and culture of every Algonquin nation. The center is a group of individuals across North America who are committed to exchanging a deeper knowledge of the culture, history, language, and wisdom of the Algonquin peoples. Center for Algonquin Culture founder director Evan Pritchard is also a professor of Native American history at Marist College in New York, where he also teaches ethics and philosophy. Professor Pritchard is a prolific author. Evan's writings are very important contributions to Native American literature and public education. I highly recommend people read his publications, which I incorporate in my lectures at Florida Gulf Coast University. CAC's excellent website, www.algonquinculture.org, includes a page describing Professor Pritchard's books, which can be ordered from his publications division, Resonance Communications. Titles of his important publications, which we will be talking about, include several of these: Native American Stories of the Sacred, No Word for Time, The Way of the Algonquin People, Native New Yorkers, The Legacy of the Algonquin People of New York, Eagle Song, An Informal Honor Roll of Great Algonquins, Introductory Guide to Mi'kmaq Words and Phrases, and Aunt Helen's Little Herb Book, A Miramichi Indian Woman's World of Herbs. The ordering address for Center of Algonquin Culture's Residence Communications is P.O. Box 1028, Woodstock, New York, 12498, USA. Once again, to find out more about the Center of Algonquin Culture's Residence Communications to order Evan's fine books, please write to P.O. Box 1028, Woodstock, New York, 12498, USA. You can also email Evan for more information and ordering. The email is resman7777@earthlink.net. Once again, to contact Evan Pritchard by email, the address is resman7777@earthlink.net. At this time, I really am very honored to welcome Evan Pritchard to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawha Takwasin to all of our relations. Evan, I would like to hear your comments on the topic of how Christianity, which I consider to be a foreign religion, has so permeated much of Indian country. I also would like you to comment on why many Native Americans seem to be so very supportive of the United States, which I consider to be a colonial government. I personally do not pledge allegiance to the American flag or sing the national anthem. Our Native peoples have been victims of warfare against us since the first arrival of the Wampisikoag, the white man. This war continues even now in the 21st century, but the cavalry has been replaced by multinational corporations that are destroying Native lands for energy and natural resources. I also honor traditional Wabanaki culture and spirituality, and do not follow any foreign religion. I have learned many good principles from reading other spiritual teachings, but I do not mix Native American ceremony with other beliefs. I think the original teachings of Jesus Christ were good as example, and were even similar to indigenous ethics. However, the Christian Church as an institution has been one of the most evil forces in the world. Take, for example, the 1493 Inter Satera papal bull of Pope Alexander VI. This Vatican edict called for the conquest and appropriation of all the lands and peoples of the non-white world. Indigenous peoples throughout the world have suffered and died for centuries from the church-sanctioned manifest destiny. The legacy of Christian missionaries and Christian boarding schools have caused generations of trauma in Indian country. I feel that the survival and well-being of indigenous peoples depend upon the continuation of our traditional cultural life ways, not on adopting a foreign government system or foreign religion. Evan, what are your comments?
You know, I do talk about these things. I may have a different point of view than you, but I think you'll understand what I'm saying in terms of intertribal politics, which I do occasionally need to do in talking to different tribes or people within different nations. And what I find is that it seems to be about 50-50, that at this point, it seems like almost 50% of our people on reservations are Christians or practicing Christians, and 50% are not. Now, one of the things that goes along with what I was saying earlier about self-determination is unification. And I'm working all the time towards unification of Algonquin-speaking people, and as a step towards unification of Native Americans, and again, this is not something that one person can do, it's something that has to happen. There is the schism between Christian Natives and non-Christian Natives, and also between those that consider themselves primarily American and those who still consider themselves conquered vassals of the new, basically, Roman Empire.
Yes.
Now, the schism is, in my immediate experience, the schism is a problem and an obstacle to unification of Native people. Okay, but behind that is what I see as a shift from the non-dualist view of traditional indigenous people and Algonquins in particular, Algonquin-speaking people, as being a people who remember a better time when there was a necessity, with no necessity to call this thing, you know, this group of people evil and this group of people good, but to see how everything all fit together as a whole. Christianity as it has become now, and I'm not talking about the teachings of Christ, but about what's happened after 311 AD, is a continuing gradual increase in the polarity. There are Christian people pretending to be Christian who are actually Satanists. That whole split hardly existed before biblical times, whatever. I mean, this is something that's developing. It's this whole concept of black and white, good and evil, splitting further and further apart. It's very disruptive, but in terms of our Algonquin tradition, we're basically, at core, we're non-dualists, and our old stories don't have good and evil, they have foolish and wise. And this is, you know, when I'm working, say, with, you know, different tribal governments, I'm constantly running into schisms and fighting between Christians on the council and non-Christians on a particular council, and this is really has to stop. And I think the thing is that I don't see how we're going to unconvert 50% of our population overnight. And I think that in terms of unification, we have to be tolerant of those who are tolerant. Maybe a little intolerant with those who are intolerant. You follow what I'm saying? And this is also the same thing in terms of the whole national identity. I see an unbroken line that not everybody sees between the democracy that we as Algonquin people develop based on individual sovereignty. Our whole concept of democracy was unique in the world, and the colonists adopted a lot of it and mixed it with a bunch of Greek and European philosophers. That's fine. But there's an unbroken line between our democracy and sovereignty and use of this land and that of the, you know, original government in 1781.
Mm-hmm.
Use of the land, respect for certain Native American traditions, respect for the sovereignty of the individual. This has been unbroken until about somewhere, let's say, September 11, 2001, just to throw out a date. After this time period, we see deterioration of this 11,000-year tradition on this land. And I still don't see it as broken. I hope it's not broken. But what are the alternatives?
Mm-hmm.
We need to heal this lineage, this tradition, and bring us back to the sovereignty of the individual, which is the foundation of North American democracy. And also, in terms of religion, freedom of religion was also something that was an Algonquin concept. And, of course, the Europeans were all excited about it in the beginning. And you don't hear about that so much. I mean, Maryland, the state of Maryland, where I grew up, which is in the east coast of the United States, was founded on religious tolerance, and yet you never hear about that anymore. So we need the tolerance for those who are tolerant. And for those who are intolerant, we need to be outspoken. We need to grant them the freedom to believe what they want to believe in order to establish our right to believe as we believe, except, of course, we already have that right. We never lost it. Because we have a history of 11,000 years with the Algonquins and with Native Americans stemming from that, that we've never given up our right for individual sovereignty, democracy, self-determination, freedom of religion. These are our inherent birthrights as Native people. And everyone who's come here, and again, this particular part, I think, ties in well with William Commander's teaching, that the Native Americans, according to the prophecy, were to allow these people from all over the world to come here and form a new kind of race, a new civilization that would be tolerant, that would be based on these philosophical principles. And it worked somewhat. In another sense, it didn't work. Or it worked for a while, and now it's being undermined. We're in a critical time where, you know, being a Native person is more important than it's ever been. But we have to, I don't think we can just un-Christianize or un-Islamicize anybody. We just have to tolerate those who are tolerant and show them by example.
Well, I certainly am listening to what you were saying very seriously, intently, and I appreciate it. I will just basically re-comment that. For example, I believe I heard you say that, you know, Maryland was built on religious tolerance. I wouldn't think that the peoples of the Chesapeake territory would necessarily agree with you as far as those people being wiped out from colonists that came here in the 1600s. But I don't want to beat this horse. I'm just someone who feels it very difficult in the 21st century as a Native person, as a Wabanaki person, to honor the American flag, for example, when, you know, I know that flag, the history of that, for example, at Sand Creek, among many hundreds of examples that I could go into.
Tribes that lived in sacred ways. We didn't know what to show us, how to pray. No need of guilt, no need of shame. We had no devil who preached in Jesus' name.
The tongues burn their way of life, and those strong enough to resist were beaten within an inch of their lives. When the Christians came,
title of that song by the Songs for Justice Project. The musicians include singer-songwriter Dennis Harrison, Betty Hurst, Gabe Horn, and yours truly, Oness. My guest today on the telephone is Mi'kmaq Wabanaki scholar Evan Pritchard. Professor Pritchard teaches Native American Studies at Marist College. He is also director of the Center for Algonquin Culture. I encourage all of our worldwide listeners to check out CAC's website, www.algonquinculture.org. The site lists many of his fine publications available for purchase. One such book Evan wrote and gifted me is entitled Path of Light, Path of Darkness, focusing on the Algonquin Seven Fires Prophecy. Would you please talk about this special and important book?
Sure. Okay, Paths of Light, Paths of Darkness is a book that I self-published because I wanted the information out. It's about the Seven Fires prophecies and applying it to understanding the history of the Algonquin people and also of the world and of the future, because it's a prophetic, you know, the Seven Fires prophecies, of course, is a prophetic body of knowledge, and a lot of it is secret. Some things have been published. For example, I had the transcripts from the Cry of the Earth at the United Nations, which you were involved in.
Yes.
And also of the book, the Meshomas book, and also things that William Kamanda and Eddie Van Venez had said to me. And in this book, I don't really reveal anything that is secret. I did research on what one could do based on known history and reassembling what probably is part of the Seven Fires prophecy. So I'm in a difficult position in a way. There's certain things that are, you know, part of the secret Medewa teachings. I'm not, you know, out.
Well, I'm not asking you to go into that. I guess what I was referring to, however, was how a lot of very important historical cultural events in human history relate to celestial events.
One of the things that was told to me by several people was that in the Seven Fires prophecy, one of the main meanings of a fire was that it was a period of time that was approximately the length of a man's life living in the old times in a more pristine environment. And the number of years is generally not talked about, but I did a lot of inner and outer research on this, and it seemed to be a certain period of time of 112 years. Which is a very long time for a person to live, but it's actually less than the amount of time that Dan Abahemet lived, the Hopi. But 112 years, I intuitively would work out, if this were the length of this cycle of time, then in a dream, by the way, I was told that if I had the right number, then you would see that at the beginning of each of these fires, there'd be these really major events that affected every Native American, going back into, you know, all the way back seven fires from now. And it turns out that the end of the seven fires end to end, like seven times 112, would be 2001. That did seem to be an event that affected every Native American because of course, of the changes in, you know, in our civil rights and in our government in the U.S. That was just the end product, but you see that you can connect all these major events, and without having it in front of me, I can't list them all. This was, again, it was a theory of how to explain why the seven fires were important historically. And so I use that as a framework for describing the history of Native people in North America through this time frame of the seven fires. So that's a large part of the book. But also, we see that eclipses are a big part of that 112-year cycle. And eclipses are a big part of the Medewin, you know, ceremonies and teachings. Lore, so to speak, of Algonquin people has to do with eclipses, and there's almost no writing on this. So I did a complete study of eclipses in North America and how they indeed did tie in directly with some of the major events in our spiritual history. For example, Wovoka was in the direct path of a complete eclipse, a total eclipse of the sun at Pyramid Lake, and that's when he received his famous vision. And that same eclipse passed over South Dakota. And of course we know that within a few years, I think it was Kicking Bear took this, I don't remember the exact name, took this teaching from Wovoka and brought it to South Dakota. And Wovoka told him about the eclipse. But there are other eclipses that have affected Native Americans. For example, Tecumseh predicted an eclipse in the Great Plains. And that to do with him and his brother, Tenskwatawa, and their power in their battle against, I guess it was, future president, whose name escapes me at the moment. The book talks about all the eclipses that have happened in the past 800 years during this Seven Fires period, and how, you know, we're coming across a time now when there aren't going to be the major eclipses, but what this means. And that ties in with prophecies from around the world. You know, it's a fairly, it's stuff that most people have no idea about.
Yes.
And so, you know, even if somebody is a scholar or they think they know history, this will be a completely new take on on what's happened in the past 800 years. And the medicine wheels, the famous stone wheels that are on the ground up in Canada as along the eastern slope of the Rocky Mountains, all the way from New Mexico, I guess, all the way up to the Arctic Circle, they seem to possibly relate to these eclipses. And perhaps, you know, the corona of the sun is depicted in stone. There's various ideas that come out of the book. But the idea is that the crossroads is imminent, that at least since 2001 we are, you know, facing this crossroads decision as to whether we'll follow that path of light or follow the path of darkness. And it turns out that I believe it's in 2017, and then I think it's 2024, like 7 years later, there will be a pair of eclipses, a major, huge, total eclipses of the path will crisscross North America, and will, and of course there's several years apart, but the, if you map out the path, they cross at Cahokia, which is the major crossing point for the Mississippi River.
Yes.
And one of the largest Native American villages in history is Cahokia.
Yes.
And so one of the, in the cover design, you see a picture of a map of North America and the map of the path of these two total eclipses crossing over North America and creating a crossroads at Cahokia. And so this is one of the things, that, you know, it's a little bit metaphysical in a way, but it's really very straightforward in that metaphorically, we will then be reaching the end of this crossroads period. And, you know, a lot of different prophecies have agreed that at some point about then, we're going to run out of time, we're going to run out of options, and you just can't keep abusing the earth and the people and the economy and the culture endlessly without paying a price.
Yes.
So the price comes down is that, and again, these, I think Eddie Benet's book very subtly implies that, you know, the people will need to, you know, make a good choice or there will be some consequences.
Yes.
And the symbolism, of course, is of the eclipse is positive. And I don't want people to think that's negative, although history shows us that great leaders generally often die in conjunction with an eclipse, and I'm talking about endless number throughout history. Is the eclipse foreshadows the eclipse of the king. And this was said by Pliny the Elder, I think, and it's been very true. But eclipses themselves are not bad. Eclipses in the Algonquin tradition are the marriage of the male and the female. And it's almost like, poetically, the shade is drawn down when they're intimate together and the light goes out. You know, there's always poetry in our tradition concerning eclipses, but historically they're very, very important. And it's eclipses are complicated.
Yes.
But it seems as if the natives had ways of understanding and predicting these eclipses, but we're not sure exactly how. The mounds in the Midwest have alignments that show they were aware of the patterns of the moon and the different risings and the different patterns of risings of the moon, which again are long, many years, patterns, 19 and a half years or whatever. 56, I mean, years is an interesting, that's half of a cycle, and that's a very important cycle of years. It's like 14-year sections, like there's the medicine wheel of life is a teaching that most of Algonquins learn from childhood about the wheel of life.
And yes.
We walk from the east to the south in our first 14 years, and then from the south to west in the next 14 years, and then from the west to the, you know, to the north in the next 14, and then back to the east again. Well, that's 56 years. And the 112 is double that.
Yes.
And so this is, that part of the sense is based on the old oral traditions. And of course, 14 is 2 times 7, and 7 is 7-year cycles are the basic cycles of biology, as you would know from your studies. And so 112 makes a lot of sense.
Yes, it does. And I will, you know, say again, for the benefit of our worldwide listeners, Native peoples throughout the world are very fine astronomers, and that's how, you know, we were able to travel across landscapes and across large bodies of water. That's no secret to anyone who, you know, has any intelligence. And I will say that I have read your writings on the sacred fire several times, and each time I really learn so much and get more insight into it. And it's a real work of art that you've done, a real fine scholarly research.
Well, thank you. It's I know it's I think an equal challenge for scholars and non-scholars, traditional people and non-traditional people, both, I think, will find something they can sink their teeth into. And me too. I mean, when I read it, I also think, wow, how does that fit into everything? And then I really have to think about it. And I would like to, as self-published, I would like to incorporate that also into one of my, mainstream books. But again, it's not, elementary school reading. And it's because astronomy is complicated.
Yes. At this point in our conversation, Evan, I'd like to ask you to please comment on any other thought or subject you might wish to speak on that I've not yet invited you to focus on. I want to, again, sincerely thank you for your friendship, for all the scholarly work you do, for your concern and caring for Mother Earth, the well-being of all life, especially your concern for the survival and growth of our Wabanaki culture and Algonquin society. So I really want to thank you very much for all you do, and I wish more people was aware of your work, your knowledge, wisdom, and your work with the elders, and I hope our conversation on Wolf Mountain Native Radio will help expand that.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I know, like I say, it's important that we stand up for each other, and I want to honor your years of work on the radio, and also I know you've had thoughts of a TV version, which I think is wonderful. You have done quite a lot for the people, and the thing is we need to stand up and support each other because there are already people in place to try to
tear us down.
Tear us down and to discredit us. And so, it's all the more important that we do stick up for each other and for, say, White Deer of Autumn and everyone that is doing this work. And again, there's not a whole lot that's getting into the mainstream about Algonquin people. There are hundreds of say, celebrities or whatever who have Algonquin roots. And of course, it's difficult for them to even talk about that, but they're just doing good work.
Yes.
And also, William Commander, who is still with us and, is... like I said, he made a speech in November, again, in front of the whole student body of the University of Ottawa. He has these great teachings. It's hard to imagine what will happen if he passes on to the spirit world.
Yes.
With all that knowledge. It's very difficult to find even, the people that really are willing to come out with that. Either they have the knowledge and they don't, want to share it with the world, or they, they don't know, and they would like to know. But one of the things that has been close to William Commander's heart, is the unification of Native American people as a whole, as well as his own Algonquin-speaking people, of which he would be considered the spiritual and temporal leader, wisdom keeper. I am personally very interested in seeing Algonquin people come together. There are various ways we could do that without invading each other's rights and privacy. Our people coming together a little more, at least, to, understand each other, to teach each other, because we have a way of life that could help almost anybody alive today in terms of applied wisdom, in terms of environmental knowledge, in terms of health practices, philosophy, spirituality. It's all there, and it's all very relevant today as it was in the past.
Correct. And I use the term earth ethics as a general way of summarizing the indigenous philosophy of reverence for Mother Earth, caring for the well-being of all life, something that you do so well as an educator and someone who I'm so thankful to the Great Spirit that we are friends and brothers in this way.
O Great Spirit, whose voice I hear in the winds, hear me, for I am young, small, weak. I need your strength and wisdom. I seek strength, O Great One, not to be superior to my brothers, but to conquer my greatest enemy, myself. I seek wisdom. The lessons you have hidden in every leaf and rock, so that I may learn and carry this message of life and hope to my people. May my hands respect the many beautiful things you have made. My ears be sharp to hear your voice. May I always walk in your beauty. And let my eyes ever behold the red and purple sunset. So when life fades like the setting sun, my spirit will come to you without shame. I have spoken.
Listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitichi Native Center. Yat Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal, culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their world views in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kitichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization,
the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yakirichi's Kinonwatakusin Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yatkidichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yatkidichi Native Center, write to Yatkidichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yatkidichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin, to all of our relations.
The music you heard prior to our Yatkidichi Native Center program identification was a Wabanaki song entitled O Great Spirit Prayer from the Mi'kmaq CD, Traditional Voices from the Eastern Door. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. I again want to thank Wabanaki scholar Evan Pritchard for being our guest on Wolf Mountain Radio. Listeners can learn more about Algonquin culture, as well as order Professor Pritchard's excellent publications from the Center of Algonquin Culture's website. That is www.algonquinculture.org. You can also write to the Center of Algonquin Culture at CAC, P.O. Box 1028, Woodstock, New York, 12498, USA. We shall conclude today's program with Full Circle Drum Society's honor song, Algonquin Flag Song. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinonwatakusin, to all of our relations.